I had the enormous good fortune to interview Sam Barbera and Steph Barker, who together with Jenny Owens-Young and Rachel White make up Los Angeles-based queer four-piece LAXs. Their debut album, Get Some, is cheeky, surfer garage pop that recalls the Shangri-Las, the Ronettes, and even the Beach Boys. We talked about music, moving to LA, fluid gender and sexuality identity, and believe it or not, their Christmas album. Get Some is out now. You should absolutely get it and get some, why not, and enjoy this interview.
Hey.
Hey, Sam. It's Kat Woods. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Not bad at all. The sun has come out, and I think it's because Melbourne went, if you're calling someone from LA, we're going to put on our best weather.
Matching the vibe. I love it.
I love it too. And so we've got Steph with us as well.
I was going to see if I can, I don't use WhatsApp that much, but I was going to try to dial her in on three-way.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can. I think there's in the top right corner, there's an ad person.
Yeah, I just saw that. Okay, let me try to see if this works.
Okay.
Okay. Steph? Hello? Hey, buddy.
Hey, hey.
Hey.
Modern technology, I'm telling you. It's good.
It's pretty wild. Yeah. I love it.
So I'm going to need each of you to identify who's talking when we're answering questions, unless I'm pointedly asking one of you, just because it's not clear from WhatsApp.
Sure.
Can one of you tell me, how did you all meet?
Yeah, this is Sam. We actually met through, well, some of us met in other ways. I met everybody, Jake Sinclair, who produced the LAX record with us. And he's married to one of my best friends, Kate. Mm-hmm. I think it sort of started with he approached myself and Jenny Owens-Young and was like, hey, I have this idea that would be sick to work on this record with you guys. Would you be down? I knew Jenny sort of like casually from parties and stuff at Jake, at Jake's place, because they wrote together.
Mm-hmm.
So then Jenny and I were like, hell yeah, let's do this. And we knew that we wanted to do this kind of more like, you know, throwback production and really play around with those kind of sounds and these old, like, you know, kind of like Beatles-y, Beach Boy, Shangri-La references that we love and do, like, our version of it. So then we started, that's how we met, and then Rachel White, who plays guitar, she is Jake's, engineer assistant as well, so she works with him all the time, and she joined in, and then, alas, we were like, we need our drummer, and Jenny, Steph, you knew Jenny, right, from New York, is that how we know you? Before I moved to LA, I was in New York, and I had met Jenny a few times there, just, like, different crossover circles, and she reached out to me, and, like, was saying how her friend Jake was looking for a drummer, and in my head, I was like, oh, is it, like, someone who just, like, wants a female drummer for their band, want a female drummer, and then, like, I found out it was completely not that, and it was like, hey, it's like an all-gay band that's, like, doing everything that you dreamed of and, like, want to play, and, like, with all of your friends that are going to become your best friends if they're not already your friends. So it's like, cool, yeah, let's do it.
I love that so much. I mean, Jake is Panic at the Disco, and just to be clear, Jake Sinclair, Panic at the Disco, and Weezer as well, and I mean, when he says, I've got this idea, was it pretty set that you would be making an album? I mean, did you really put your trust in him?
I don't think we knew exactly what, that we were doing a whole album or, you know, because it was very just like casual, you know, it's not like we went in, it was fast, but like casual. The idea was just like, well, let's just like start writing and see what happens. And so we just started like, you know, putting sort of like dates on the book where it'd be like, this is right before we had Steph, so, but this is like the very beginnings, it would be like, okay, so me and Jenny will just go over to Jake's house on Saturday afternoon from like 1 to 4 and we'll see what happens, you know, and we just started doing that, and we just wrote every song on acoustic, and so we would write like a song a day within a matter of like a few hours, and just kind of hang out, you know?
So at what point did you know what the sound was? Because I'm really hearing the Angels, the Ronettes, the Shangri-Las. I mean, was that a discussion that you had before you started writing and then that set the palette?
I feel like the discussions, yes, like a little bit, yeah. But I would say that the only, like, clear... I mean, we would bring up other references as we were writing, but I would say, like, as we went into it, I think like our probably closest reference to being like, these are the style of chord changes we want, these are the type of harmonies we want, would be more a lot like the Beatles, really. You know, okay. Like what would the Beatles be if it was like four women, you know? And then as we started writing, you know, we all come from different backgrounds and we're into like, you know, indie and punk and other stuff like that. And I feel like those kind of leanings, once we actually were writing, kind of just filtered in there as well, you know, which kind of like, you know, brings it to some of those other references as well, which we're happy to accept.
Sam, you especially had established a name in the mainstream with Beginners. Can you tell me about when and where that started and whether you're still creating under that name?
I started Beginners in 2014. And yeah, that's been like my main sort of musical project since then. And it's, you know, it's more like kind of electro poppy, I don't know, you know. And yeah, that's been my main thing. But once we started LAX's, it was kind of just both things, main thing. Still doing Beginners. It's actually pretty intense because we have a record rollout for both projects right now at the same time.
It's a lot.
So it's a lot going on. But it's really nice because with Beginners, it's like such a different world musically that it just... they don't like really compete. They're like not even in the same space, really, which is nice.
Yeah, and look, I mean, women are well known for their multitasking. I would think it's kind of nice, perhaps in a way, to have that really different synth pop sound to offset that sort of garage surfer rock of LAX's. Steph, What's your background? Because I see that you have toured with Kate Nash, and quite a number of other big names. Do you have your own solo thing as well? And what is that like?
I toured with Kate Nash and Murph from the Wombats. I got to go to Australia with him, which is super exciting.
Oh wow! Did you come to Melbourne?
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
I have a solo project as well. It's called Baby Bulldog. And I basically, just use that as another outlet. I write and produce everything. It's like very, very, like, garage rock, kind of just like, I'm not a perfectionist, weirdly, in that world. Like, everywhere else I feel like I am, but it's like the one place where I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll just, like, do a take and that's it.
And so are you independently releasing? We did. I got a little message on my phone saying Sam is muted, and I went, "Oh my god, not by me." There's a real theme I thought of: teenage rites of passage, things like first love and heartbreak and rejection. All the feelings sort of magnified the way that they are when you're a teenager. And I'm wondering, is that formative? Is that did you specifically say we're going to write about these things, or is it just that this is what's so relatable to everyone?
I think it's just when we were sitting in there, we were just, it's funny because we weren't really even talking about teenage, we were talking about our current lives. You know, I think these are just like, unfortunately or fortunately, like just lifelong kind of experiences. So it kind of like, you know, span the gamut in there. But yeah, we would just like go in there and just talk about funny stories from our life or tough things we were going through. Like at the time, Jenny was going through a divorce, you know, and for me, like our first writing session ever together, my girlfriend had just dumped me like the night before. So I walked in literally in tears. Because the minute Jake opened the door to his house and was like, hey, I just started sobbing.
Oh, no.
And then, I know, and then the whole day, and that's when we wrote West Keys.
Once in a lifetime, if all your stars align, you might be lucky enough to find someone who completes you. Someone who really needs you. But once you got something, then you got something that you're afraid to lose. And just because they love you, don't mean that they won't leave you.
We were just kind of talking about our lives, but like current day, you know, just current day or just like, you know, different adult experiences. I just think they happen to be like, you know, these sort of life themes that, you know, always kind of happen.
And so lyrically, would you be writing most of the content, Sam?
Well, we split it up. So it was like, Jenny and I wrote, basically we had, so when Steph joined, Steph like fully wrote Not Again. That's Steph's, and Rachel White brought in Cocaine Girl, and then Jenny and I collaborated on the remaining songs.
Okay. Here's a question, and I'd like both of you to answer it in your own way. Were you always confident in your queerness? And by that, I mean both in acknowledging it to yourself, but then being able to be shameless about, I guess, expressing it in your art, in your professional and personal lives.
Steph, you want to go? This is a good one, yeah. So I feel like I want to scream yes, but definitely when I was younger, no. I'm from like a small town in New Hampshire, and I always knew that I was queer. Like, it was like from the very beginning I always knew, but I definitely thought, oh, something's wrong with me, or like, what, you know, because nobody that I knew around me actually was. And it wasn't until I was in college really that I was like living my true self and like living my life and like doing whatever. So I think it did take a little longer from the time that I knew, which just happened to be like very early on. In terms of like expressing that musically, I would say I've always been very confident in that. I think part of it is because like I visually like represent myself, I kind of think, like, you know, if you're, I don't like to use like stereotypical like kind of like descriptor terminology, but like I look pretty gay, so, like, I don't think I like, even if I was like trying to hide it, I don't think I could have ever like hit it. So it was just like, this is me, this is what I'm doing, this is who I am, and I'm gonna like fucking go with it. wasn't super confident. Then in college, I like got to actually just like live my true life, and I think I've been like blasting that since then.
And so, just to clarify, that's Berklee College of Music, and would you have been what, 18 when you started?
Yeah, I think I was 17, mm-hmm. and yeah, that was Berklee College of Music.
Perfect. Yeah. Sam, talk to me.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I actually came out much later. But it was interesting. I just, my scenario is a little weird. I just, like, never, I didn't really have a feeling that I was queer and that I was sort of, like, running from it or confused about it. I just always assumed and felt very straight.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had basically a writer's camp, they'll basically publishing companies or labels or whatever, they'll put all these different songwriters, in the studio, together to do like kind of fire drill writing songs for their artists that need mm-hmm. like singles or whatever it is. And so I was in one of those, like a writer's camp, and there was this girl in there, and I was like, whoa, like, who's that? Like, she's, like, so cool. And then, like, within, like, a day or two, I was like, if I don't make out with this girl, I'll literally die. She's completely foreign. Joking with my friends, like on my text thread, you know, I'm like, I guess I'm a lesbian now, ha, ha, ha. You know, and then I did try to make out with her that night, and she wasn't having it because she had a girlfriend, so good on her.
Oh, yeah.
And but after that, I was like, I hadn't felt like attracted to somebody like that in so long. I had to, you know, it's just like, I don't know. And so after that is when I like was like, okay, if I can feel this strongly about this person, then like, what if I could feel that strongly about all these other women
mm-hmm.
out there, you know? Mm-hmm. So then I like switched all my apps, everything, you know, like over to women basically. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of just never looked back. You know, I was like, I'm theoretically like open to dating men, you know, like. And I've dated, you know, trans men and stuff like that. Yeah, I don't know. It was just like from that point on, I was like, it felt so natural. But it's funny because it never felt unnatural to me before either.
I guess that's the definition to some. I mean, as open as it is or not, the definition of queerness is not. You'd say gay if you meant gay, but in queerness, I think there's almost a, and I hate to use that 21st century word, here it comes, fluidity. There is that fluidity of going, I don't need to define myself so that you're happy. I'll just do what I do.
Right. I know. It's interesting because people have a really hard time with it on both sides.
Well, I mean, I'm in my late 30s now, and I haven't been in a relationship forever, and I just think, well, I would not identify as gay, but then even though I'm sexually attracted to some men, I don't trust them as far as I can throw them. So to me in a sense that's kind of queerness as well, because you're stuck in a gray zone of who are you attracted to then?
Right. Yeah, I know. And there's also different types of attractions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I dated somebody who was like, no, I'm a lesbian. You know, she's like, I don't understand this like queer, you know, sort of pansexual thing. Like she never understood me really. But she had, like, slept with more men than I ever have, you know? And she slept with, like, all these, like, celebrities,
did she get butterflies for these guys, or did she just want to have sex with them? You know what I mean? And I was like, well, I don't know. I'm like, you seem straighter than me. I might be able to form an emotional attachment, but I don't really just want to, like, go sleep randomly with guys. Like, I don't have that kind of sexual pull. You know, so I was like, you're more queer than I am.
That is a song waiting to happen, and I would call it Butterflies, but you can thank me for that later. I am wondering, is LA an easy town to be a queer girl and an artist? Because to an outsider, and especially being in Australia, when I think of Los Angeles, and many people think of it, we think of Hollywood, we think of celebrities, and it seems from the outside an extremely unaffordable place to live in. I mean, Sam, is that perhaps why you were working as a songwriter? And can you tell me a bit about that as well?
Yeah, I mean, well, A, it is very expensive. You know, but I would say I've spent a lot of time, like, in most, I feel like in a lot of, like, big metropolitan sort of, like, cool cities where there would be a good queer scene. You know, like, I spent a lot of time in London, Berlin, you know, New York, all these places. And I gotta say, I think LA might be one, I mean, it's definitely one of the best for if you're queer, I think. I think we have, like, a really, like, a fairly big and poppin' queer scene, which is nice. And so, I don't know, and there's a lot of outlets and all this kind of stuff, you know, to, if you're going to be queer and, you know, to be an artist, you know, it's hard because, it's a great place to be an artist because this is where everything's going down, you know, or a lot of stuff anyway, so you have, like, access to really great writers and studios and whatever you would need. You know, it is expensive, but you just gotta find a place with rent control.
And just one more question for you, Sam. With the writing, are you still doing that? And is that pretty lucrative to do songwriting camps, songwriting for other musicians and TV, et cetera?
Yeah, you know what? I kind of, like, veered away from that because I found for beginners, and it's kind of, you know, nuance why I end up making more money with beginners, but even with beginners as being, a, you know, essentially like an indie project, I actually made, I realized, like, was like, wait, I'm making more money from my own project because I own everything with it, mm-hmm. right? I'm not, like, splitting those, you know, like, songwriters get a really small cut from stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just realized even as an indie artist, I make more with my personal project than I do when I get cuts on a lot of these albums. And so that's kind of, I switched away from that. Jenny writes for a lot of artists. She's been, like, super successful with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's worked for her. But for me, I ended up being like, I'm not making as much. And it was kind of like, you know, stealing my soul because you're always in there, like, writing for somebody else, like, from their perspective and trying to communicate their story. And then a lot of times you put all this effort in and a lot of times it doesn't even get used on the album, or it just ends up having all these songs that just float around in space forever, but that you don't want to use because it's not your story or your voice really.
Mm-hmm. Steph, tell me about living in LA. How was the transition for you, and did you have to do anything else on the side to be able to afford to live in LA?
When I moved from New York, I'm not gonna lie, when I first moved here, I did not like it at all. I was like, I can't believe people don't walk anywhere. Why is there no subway? Why is there not pizza? Why can't I just, like, order bagels or get food at any time of the day? So it took me a while. Everyone that I talked to was like, give it, like, a year and a half, and you'll, like, warm up to it. And they were right. I've been here for, like, 6 years now.
it's been good in the sense that there's a lot more space, like, physically and also, like, mentally. It opened up the doors for me to even, like, start songwriting and producing and doing any of that. When I lived in New York, I was only focused on playing drums and was just playing for different artists, and that's, like, all I was ever doing. Mm-hmm. And I was working, like, a million other jobs just to, like, try and play drums for people because it's also really expensive there.
Mm-hmm.
So when I moved to LA, I think that was kind of, like, a huge... It just, like, opened me up to have the capacity to even think about doing other things because I wasn't, you know, writing or creating or doing any of that. So that's been, like, a huge difference of just being in LA, kind of, like, you actually do have more space, and it is very expensive, but compared to New York, it's, like, it's quite similarly, and you get more space here. Like, I'm able to kind of, like, have a little studio in my apartment where I can, like, make music and create, whereas I could never do that in New York.
Do your neighbors go crazy that you've got the drums?
Yeah, they actually don't, which is shocking. I have two, like, an upper neighbor and then a person that lives in the same level as me, and I've talked to them, and they are, like, cool with it, and I was like, I don't know how this is possible, but that's amazing. So yeah, that, like, that would have never happened in New York, no way. I set up my drums one day in New York, and my neighbor was like, what are you doing? And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna stop, I was just trying it, just testing it. You know, I was just trying it, I had to try for the sake of time.
I am wondering, so 6 years ago, what was the catalyst for moving?
Playing, just touring with more artists. Mm-hmm. The scene in New York, and I think it's probably similar still today, I don't know for sure, but when I was there, there just weren't, you know, there weren't artists that were hiring bands to go on tour. Mm-hmm. I think if you were an artist yourself or if you were in a band, you could make things happen. But at the time, I was just looking to be a hired gun and go on tour with different artists.
Mm-hmm.
And just none of that, it was non-existent in New York. And it was very cutthroat. The gigs that were available, it was like one person had it and like they had that gig. There's no way that you were getting in on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had heard through friends who had made the move from New York to LA and just like various places, you know, it's, you should definitely come out here. This is way more opportunity. And like, as soon as I came out to LA, like within, I don't know, it was like 2 weeks on Craigslist looking for gigs, actually a valid place to look for gigs. Shockingly, I started playing with Coast Modern and they like, you know, I started touring with them and kind of like just from then on, then I linked up with Kate Nash and then I started working with Merch and it was like this whole, I feel like people were actually referring me to gigs and I was just like, what is happening? This would have never happened in New York.
I love it. You just needed to get some momentum up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, and it totally changed. Like it was like night and day from that scene anyways.
And Sam, where did you move from? Like, what was your background?
Oh, I moved from Indiana, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved to LA. After college, I moved to LA to, essentially, I was here applying to doctoral programs in sociology. I wanted to do, like, public policy and like government think tank work and like really work on basically just like, you know, social change and things like that and policy changes. And so I was here applying to graduate schools and then I started playing bass in my friend's band that he was starting. Then that band sort of took off. And so then I like deferred college a year because I got accepted and then I deferred 1 year and then I don't even remember ever even thinking about it again. You still want to be like politically and socially active, but I think a lot of that kind of stuff is like, now that I'm like an adult and I have life experience and stuff like that, I just know that, you know, if I wasn't doing music for a job, I wouldn't. I, that's not what I would want be doing,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know that when you're, like, you know, 20.
No, it's funny, isn't it? How are you guys both in your, what, early 30s, late 20s? Cool.
And I'm actually 40.
Get out of town.
Yeah. Me and Jenny, we're in the same grade.
Oh, there's something in the water in LA. It's keeping you extremely youthful. I'll come over and have some of that. Linger. I love your version of linger, and I'm wondering whose idea was that? About Linger was the fact that it's quite layered for anyone, especially I guess over 30, who would remember seeing sort of Zombie and Linger the first time, knowing that Dolores did suicide. I think the layers of listening to that song and the sadness in it, it's more than the song that really works. Yeah, it is just one of those songs that delivers a lot. Like, you listen to it and it brings up a lot.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, all of us, when it came up as an option, I think all of us were like, oh yeah, this is perfect, because that's a mm-hmm. song that moved all of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think a lot of people, I mean, I don't know that I've ever met somebody who doesn't like that song.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so great.
So tell me what the plan is now. Was there always a plan to have a sustainable band that you were all committed to, or is it a kind of, fly by the seat of your pants, see how the album goes, non-committal sort of attitude? What's the modus operandi?
I think, definitely now we're all committed and would love to see, you know, love to do all the things with LAX's, you know? Right, I think when we first started, we were like, you know, who knows what's gonna happen? We're just like writing these songs on an acoustic guitar and like, this is fun, you know? And then as the album started to take shape and we all really, you know, we started really seeing like the magic that was being built, and we're all really close now as well as people and bandmates and stuff like that. And now it's definitely, you know, we want to give it everything we can. And hopefully, like, comes out, we would love to be touring and mm-hmm. bringing it to life.
And what is the reality for touring in LA? Because I know Australia is pretty much shut down. There's nothing happening here. What are your tour prospects over there?
We have an album release show on September 30th,
mm-hmm.
Which should be pretty fun.
Where's that at?
It's at an event space, actually. It's in Highland Park, like in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And the event space is basically being totally like customized for the C release. So that will be super fun. We're really looking forward to that. Rehearsing and getting everything ready, and it's been so fun. So, I don't know, you know, beyond that, we're like really hoping that we can figure out some like tours that we can sneak onto or put together ourselves.
Let's put it out there in the world then. Who would you like to be touring with?
Oh my gosh, Steph, who should we tour with?
You know who I thought of? Actually, I was going to text you guys.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's even releasing anything.
hear that.
That would be like so fucking fun. I don't know. So I thought of that. I was like, that would be a freaking, come on, support that tour.
Hell yeah.
Go.
Oh my God, I love it. We do have it. I don't know if we're going to release it this winter. Like, I don't know what the plan is for this, but we have like a Christmas EP. We have like a holiday. We have a holiday EP video.
Oh God, I'm so excited about that.
Yeah. One of the songs is fully done. It's just not out. And then we have two more songs that are done with that one's like half recorded. And what's the... Do you remember the one that we half recorded, Steph?
I know. I can't remember. It's like...
It's very funny. I think the one that we have recorded, is that the gay one? The one.
Yeah.
It's basically like the whole song is about how, like, you know, like in the queer community, these kind of like holiday Christmas party type things, it's like all of your exes are there. Oh, it's called Mary. It's called Mary
Xmas, right?
That just sounds like a nightmare, frankly.
I know, but it's like it's something we're so used to. You have to deal with it everywhere we go. Like, half queer people, like, half of our best friends we've dated, you know? And there's no escaping. It's like a small enough community that, like, that just happens. And so the whole song is, like, about being, like, at this, like, holiday party, you know, with, like, all your exes and all this stuff. It's really funny.
You know what's going to happen? You'll release that. All your exes will get furious and you'll end up, like, all living out in Joshua Tree, just, you know, just the four of you in vans.
Exactly.
No, I wanted to say thank you both so much for taking the time to talk to me about the new album. I love it.
Thank you.